Okay, good evening, everybody. This is SCAS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCAS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCAS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima. And all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish your contact direct so that the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-term stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found at scasvoip.com, that is Sierra Charlie, Alpha Romeo Sierra, Victor Oscar India Papa.com. I am in net control for this session. My call is Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima, and my name is Dave. I am located in Newport in South Wales in the United Kingdom, with a current temperature of 2 degrees Celsius, which is approximately 35.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, prior to starting, I would like to ask if there is any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. Okay, that's always good news. Do we have anybody celebrating their birthday this week or any special event or anniversary or occasion? Okay, nobody getting older. Okay, this is the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur radio-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. Now let me please advise all stations connected that this net might be recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast. All stations participating will be a part of that recording. And now I'm going to pass it over to our captain, Gordon Kilo Yankee 6 Victor, for his opening comments. Take it away, Gordon.
Hey, thank you, David. I'm still chuckling when you said approximately 36.6 degrees Fahrenheit in Wales. You sure sound bubbly for being so close to midnight over there. Thank you, David, and welcome everyone to the November 2020 program. Gordon here, KY6V. Tonight we will be discussing amateur radio online testing. In doing so, we will also include how it is done in other parts of the world. We wish to thank all the shakers and the bakers that have compiled the procedure for the online testing, and they stepped up at a time of need to fill a void created by the world epidemic. We will be starting by working from afar and ending up here in the United States, this being done due to the wide divergence of time in countries being represented in. We will be starting with David, who you just heard, GW8SZL, who will be speaking from Wales in the UK, where it is now midnight, 12 at night, and following by Robert down in Sydney, Australia. That's VK2DY, where it will be about 11 a.m. tomorrow morning for those folks in Australia. We will then move into our speakers for the U.S., who will include David, KB9EWG in Wisconsin, and Charlie, K3CL in Pennsylvania. So, without further ado, let's get started. GW8SZL, the podium is yours, sir, from KY6V.
Okay, this is Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima, over here in South Wales in the United Kingdom. Now it's 5 past midnight here. Thank you, Captain. Very much appreciated. Okay, now tonight I'm going to discuss the new online testing for the radio amateurs examinations here in the UK. Now, there's currently no age restriction on obtaining a radio amateur's license here in the UK. And like when I got licensed over 40 years ago, when the minimum age requirement was 14 years old. In fact, you could pass the exam up to a year before your 14th birthday, but then you'd have to wait to get your license. And I had to wait a few months before getting out my 14th birthday. But that's an aside. Okay, there are 3 tiers of license currently here in the UK. They are the entry level, which is called the foundation license, followed by the intermediate, and then the full license, also known as the advanced license. There are also practical examinations associated with the foundation and the intermediate license courses, including basic CW appreciation for the foundation course. Now, the RSGB, the Radio Society of Great Britain, has dropped the practical assessment as part of the individual license examinations due to radio clubs having to close due to the COVID restrictions. Now, whether they will be reintroduced or not is a matter of ongoing discussion. Personally, I think the practical tests are a very good idea, but other people's opinions may differ. Now, the difference between the license classes are: as an entry-level foundation license holder, you're allowed a maximum of 10 watts on all modes from HF up to and including the 10 GHz band, but excluding the 5 MHz band. Now, as an intermediate license holder, the next step up, you're allowed a maximum of 50 watts on all modes from HF up to and including 24 GHz band, but also once again excluding the 5 MHz band. But as a full license holder, you're allowed a maximum of 400 watts on all modes on all the legal amateur bands in the UK, including the 5 MHz band. So basically the 5 MHz 60 meter band is only available to a full license holder. Now, the examinations here in the UK are coordinated and run by our national society, the Radio Society of Great Britain, which is also known as the RSGB. Our licensing authority is called Ofcom, that's Oscar Foxtrot Charlie Oscar Mike, which stands for the Office of Communications. Now, up until the recent COVID pandemic, all amateur examinations would take place at official license examination centres authorised by the Radio Society of Great Britain. These are normally radio clubs, but not limited to such. Now, as all the radio clubs had to close, no examinations or practical assessments could take place. So the RSGB had a look at implementing online examinations instead. Even though there were discussions about this option over the last 3 years, it was not high on their priority list until now. So the online examination in the UK was born. Having recently gone through the process with my son Declan, who has now achieved intermediate status at the age of 12 with online invigilation, I am very familiar with the processes involved, and it was only the end of July this year that he took the actual online examination. Now, the first step in the process is to apply to the Radio Society of Great Britain and pay the appropriate fee for the license examination that you wish to take. You're advised to make it at least 10 days from the date of application. The reason for this will become clear shortly. Now, once the RSGB processes your application, the candidate will receive an email confirming that your date is available, and if not, they will offer any free slots around that date. Now, once a date and time has been agreed, the candidate will receive an email from their assigned invigilator outlining the series of events to follow. First off is a mutually convenient time for the invigilator to contact you and talk you through the examination procedure and what is expected from the candidate in order for the examination to proceed. This is very informal and you can ask any questions. Now, these include having Cisco WebEx installed on 2 devices. Now, Cisco WebEx is only allowed method to supply the 2 video feeds and an audio feed to the invigilator. One video feed could be the webcam, say, on a laptop, so the invigilator can see the candidate's face on. And the other video feed is a side view in order to prevent cheating, so basically across the keyboard. either from the left or the right-hand side. A mobile phone can be used for this view as well, but both views must be available and working, or the examination cannot take place. The audio feed can be either from the laptop or the mobile phone, so the invigilator can hear everything that goes on while the examination is in progress. Also, the candidate needs to install a piece of software called TestReach, which is an online assessment tool. This is what will be used for the examination itself. In the run-up to the examination, you can familiarize yourself as a candidate with the TestReach software as many times as you would like until you're happy in using it. Now, before the examination starts, you must have proof of your identity. Now, this has to be a photo ID, which is held up to one of the cameras so the invigilator can see that it is the real candidate that is taking the examination and not somebody else. The requirement is a passport or a photo ID driving license. Now, if the candidate is under 16, they might not have a passport and definitely not a photo ID driving license. Now, in that event, a parent's or legal guardian's passport or photo ID driving license will suffice. But this must be agreed before the examination date, or the examination cannot go ahead. There are also other acceptable forms of identification, but once again, they need to be agreed before the date of the examination. Now, if the candidate previously applied for an examination at the radio club, which got cancelled, and had already passed the practical assessments, only applicable to the foundation and intermediate examinations only, they will be asked to present the appropriate filled-in form to one of the webcams. Now, as mentioned previously, this is no optional, but you will still be asked, so it can be added to your examination records. Next, the invigilator will ask the candidate to pan around the room in which the examination to take place to ensure that the room is suitable for the examination to proceed. That could be either with a mobile phone or just lift the laptop up and so the examiner, the invigilator, can see the layout of the room and if there's anything that shouldn't be there to hinder the examination. Well, that covers the first familiarization with the invigilator, but that is not where it ends. Yet another time and date is arranged, usually a couple of days before the examination date, with the invigilator. This time, it is ensure everything is working correctly. So basically a live test of the video and audio feeds, and also a dry run on the TestReach software, just in case of any technical problems. The main problem encountered is usually internet bandwidth problems. Hence, this live test was created to give the candidate more time to resolve them before the actual examination time, as if the invigilator did not have the two video feeds without freezing and the audio feed, the examination could not continue and will have to be rescheduled to a later date. Another live test can be arranged if any problems are found to ensure they have been eradicated. Now we come to examination time. The invigilator will go through the procedure previously outlined, the photo ID, panning the camera around the room, etc. Then the candidate will be told that the questions are generated as soon as they log in to the TestReach software, which is unlike in the US. Candidates for all the three tiers of license in the UK do not have prior access to the question pool. That is why it is essential here in the UK that everything in the course syllabus is fully understood before attending any of the examinations. The invigilator will then explain that once the examination starts, they will not be able to see what is on the candidate's monitor. They cannot see the questions or the answers selected by the candidate. The only things the invigilator can see now are the two video feeds and listen to the open audio feed, which is muted on the invigilator's side for the duration of the examination. But the candidate can talk to the invigilator at any time, and then the invigilator has to unmute themselves to respond to the candidate. Even if the candidate answers all the questions in a short period of time, the submit button for the actual examination is greyed out until after 50% of the allocated time for the examination has passed. So basically, if it was an hour examination, they can't submit their answers until after 30 minutes have passed. Now, once the candidate has finished the examination and submitted it, the invigilator still cannot see the candidate screen. but the candidate will know the score and whether they have passed or failed straight away. Usually the invigilator asks the candidate for the score at this time. And now if the candidate is successful, the Radio Society of Great Britain forwards that information to Ofcom, the regulator here in the UK, and once that has been done, the candidate can log into the Ofcom site and select his or her new shiny call sign. Now, I'm going to pass it over to Declan, 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel, who has first knowledge and experience of the online examination system here in the UK as a very recent candidate. Thank you, Declan, for staying up late this evening to take part in this month's TIN. So over to you, Declan, 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. This is Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima.
This is 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel, Declan in South Wales, and I took an online intermediate examination and passed, so I have first-hand knowledge of the examination system, as my father, Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima, said. So, in my own opinion, the online method of examination is better for two reasons. The first is because you get your results immediately after finishing your examination, whereas the invigilator has to mark it if you are using an optical mark sheet on paper. And the second is because you are less likely to make mistakes as opposed to if you took the exam on paper with an optical mark sheet, also known as an OMS. As even if you get the correct answer, you will get a wrong mark if you put that answer in the wrong place. Another thing I want to talk about is the online invigilation. I have absolutely no issues with the way you get invigilated, but I was surprised firsthand to be invigilated by Dave Wilson, the president of the Radio Society of Great Britain, which is actually often abbreviated to the RSGB, when I actually took my own examination. So overall, I feel that online examination is better than examination with an optical mark sheet. So now I would like to ask for if any of the audience has any questions, and I will try to answer them. But if I cannot answer them, then Dave Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima will answer them for me. So, does anyone have any questions at this time?
Kilo Golf 5 Zulu India.
Okay, KG5ZI, go ahead. This is 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel.
All right, thank you, Declan. 2 Whiskey 0 Kind Young Ham, this is Kilo Golf 5 Zulu India. It seems striking to me that your system over there is really bureaucratic. It seems like you're doing 2 or 3 meetings before you even get to test, so that's probably pretty cool because once you're doing your test session, nothing could go wrong unless you fail. And it's pretty striking also that it took a COVID virus to actually kick the UK in the pants and get online testing going. I think that's really a good thing that you guys have got that started. And congratulations to you, Declan, 12 years old, and you're rubbing elbows with royalty on the radio in Great Britain. That's pretty cool. The big boss of the RSGB, huh? Very nice. And I like the fact that you can choose your call sign, too. That's pretty amazing. And I have one question about the study syllabus. Is that a commercial thing that you have to buy? And the contents in your syllabus, is it really easy, unlike here where we get the questions and answers and all we have to do is memorize those, is it easy to glean the information that you need? Those are the questions I have there, Declan. So back to you, KG5ZI.
Yeah, this is 2 Whiskey 0, Kilo Yankee Hotel. The syllabus itself is actually free, I think, supplied by the RSGB themselves. But if you want any study aids or study guides like books and actual, like, mock exam test questions to get you into, to basically kick you into touch and just give you a little feel of how the examination is, going to be and what type of questions are going to be featured in there, you'll have to pay for those, like the study guides and the study aids, like the books and such. Well, so I now So I am now going to pass it back to you. KG5ZI, do you have anything else, or shall I move on? This is 2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel.
Okay, Declan, thank you. 2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel from KG5ZI. Please move on. I was just curious about the syllabus in how easy it would be to get the information out of there, but if they have third-party guides that will lead you in that process, that makes perfect sense. All right, young man, proceed. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. KG5ZI.
Okay, this is 2Whiskey0 Kilo. Yes, this is 2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. Thank you very much for the questions, and I think it's actually pretty it is actually pretty normal, and it's never mind. I'm just gonna move on. Next to speak is Robert VK2DY from 2Whiskey0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. The mic is yours.
Yes, 2Whiskey0, kind kid. I've forgotten your call sign. I'm sorry, Declan. This is Robert, VK2DY, 32 degrees Celsius at 11 o'clock in the morning here. It's 90 Fahrenheit and still going up. Okay, good evening. This is Robert, VK2DY. I'm a level 2 examiner for the Australian Maritime College, which is the organization that actually holds the deed for amateur radio examinations here in Australia. So for a little bit of background information, there are two acts of parliament that come into play here. The Radio Act, which actually gives the ACMA the authority to control the airwaves. The ACMA is our equivalent to the FCC or Ofcom. It's the Australian Communications and Media Authority. And to control the others. And then there's a second act, which is the license condition document, which actually defines how we are, what our responsibilities and rights are on the airwaves once we are licensed. There are exactly the same three classes of licenses, foundation, standard, and advanced. The slight differences between us and the UK is that we allow 100 watts for standard licenses, and that's about the only difference, actually, for that. But we also restrict the frequencies a bit more. You have to be advanced class to get into the microwave areas and a number of other areas. So I think we restrict the access to airwaves a bit more than the UK does. Let me set. So, the organization that conducts the radio exams, at least since this year, is the Australian Maritime College. This is a little bit unusual. It used to be the WIA, but they competed for the bid and did not get it, or the deed and did not get it. So it's now the Australian Maritime College. Here you test for what's called an AOCP, an amateur operator's certificate of proficiency. That's hard to say. Certificate is issued for life and is therefore not renewable. You can test for any certificate in any order. Each test is $90, and you get one attempt for that $90. However, you can't really skip a license level or tiers, so you have to pass the foundation license and get the foundation license before you get the advanced. Even if you pass the advanced, you still have to pass the standard and the foundation. So this order business is a little bit tricky here, I think. There is also a license regulations exam, which you also have to pass, and that's also $90.
Well, Robert, we've lost you, Tiger. There was a little bit of breakup in there. I don't know if it's your Wi-Fi hookup or just what. So let's see if you've got stabilized. KY6V to VK2DY. Okay, Well, if he gets back to us, he can fill in the tail end. He's pretty well covered the items that I think he wanted to cover here this evening, guys and gals. At this point, before I turn it over to David up there in Wisconsin, do we have any questions so far from the group pertaining to what's being discussed here this evening, or just say hello and check in? Please call now. Over. Okay. All's quiet. I'll give Robert one more try here. VK2DY, are you back?
WG is a Glarg VEC and a Glarg VE, and that's how I found out about the SCARS net. Back to you, KN6FBS.
Okay, KN6 VPS, would you repeat that, sir? For some reason, I think the system or somebody was doubling with you, and I only got a little part of it. Over.
Yeah, this is David, KN6FPS, Foxtrot Papa Sierra, and I've been working with David, KB9EWG, as a Glarg VE, and thought I'd check in, and he's how I found out about this net and also the SCARS Extra Class. Back to you guys, KN6FPS.
All right, you bet, David, and I remember you with us on the extra class that we put forth. Well, good. Before we move on to David there, is there anything that you'd like to say about the software and the arrangements that are being made with what you and David are doing? Are you happy with it? Are you satisfied with it? And it looks to me like you guys are doing a bang-up job. Over.
Well, we've had over 3,000 candidates so far, and we're growing all the time. The XanTool software is pretty good. It has its glitches. Today there was some server malfunctions, but we managed to get through all the examinees. But it gives us the ability to monitor the testing progress and to sign all the forms afterwards and send them on. So I like it. A little bit different, and I think it's somewhat more efficient than the in-person stuff, because you get your call signs within the next business day. Everything's electronic, so it's pretty fun for me, and I get to meet people from all over the country and all over the world. That's another bonus. This is KN6FPS.
Well, I thank you for that, David. I've noticed the growing participation of the examinees, and I think that's just absolutely great. To your knowledge, David, has anybody made a comparison to, let's say, last year, maybe comparing to where we are right now with examinations new licensees as compared to 2019? It seems to me you guys are beating them hands down. Over.
Well, I think it's more, but I don't have any specific statistics to back it up. But I could I'm friends with our VEC, and I could probably ask her to get me some statistics, or she might know offhand. We're having our club meeting tomorrow, and I might inquire as to what she thinks the number is. But yeah, we're the last time I looked, it was 3,033 examinees and 3,100 elements passed in 145 remote sessions since the beginning of April. This is KN6FPS.
Boy, I think that's marvelous, David. I really do. Okay. And David's coming up next. He may be able to answer that question, too. I'm just curious, because it seems to me that it's not only more, I think it's much more than the regular testing that we have been familiar with. Okay, last call for VK2DY. Oh, I see you're up on the marquee here and not coming through hams. David, are you back with Robert, are you back with us? And would you like to finish up, or what's your pleasure? Over.
Yeah, VK2DY. All of a sudden, I was just talking to blank air, and I didn't know what happened. I didn't look at my phone. There was no, so I don't know where I left off and where I didn't. VK2DY.
$80 was the last word.
I may have doubled with you, Tom. Say that again to Robert.
Yeah, this is KG5ZI. Robert, I think the last thing out of your mouth was $80. Over.
Okay, well, I can continue, I guess. Basically, it's $90 for any exam, and you can take the certificates in any order, but you have to have a cumulative group of certificates. So even if you take the advanced and pass the advanced certificate, you still have to pass the practical, the foundation, the exam, the rules, and the standard license. So it does no good to skip ahead of this. And you get one exam for $90. If you fail it, you fail it, and you have to pay another $90. So anyway, let me see if I can shorten this a little bit here. We used to use the term invigilator. The position is still an invigilator position, but we changed the name to examiner back a couple decades ago. An examiner does not get to mark the papers. An examiner does not get to choose the questions. The questions are chosen by the Australian Maritime College. So basically, it's a proctor role. There are three levels of examiners here in Australia as well, which makes things more complicated. You've got level one is a trainee, level two is allowed to do in person, and level three is allowed to do in person and online. So I'm a level two, so I can't do the online exams. However, I know how they work. I've seen them done. So very similar to the UK again. You put in a web request. They either assign an examiner or you request an examiner, and the whole process that Dave explained with negotiating things out takes place here as well. So we're very similar to the UK. Let me reset a second. Okay, got a microphone on my screen, so I'm okay. So again, you request the once the examiner and the examinee have set up their time. The examiner can request an exam, and the exam will be sent to the examiner. So I moved off my script here. The clock is ticking then. These exams expire typically within 3 months. So if you don't use the exam, they've expired and you can't use it, and they won't grade it for you. But let's get into the remote exam. The other thing about the exams, let me add this here to it. Again, the exams are graded by the Australian Maritime College, not the examiner, and they're not graded instantaneously. You can have a wait of any time from a week to 3 or 4 weeks, although it's been better lately. Let me reset for a second. So let's go to the online exams here. The remote exams. So basically, again, just like Dave said, I was repeating Dave, you scan the room, you have the ID, you pay your fee in advance. All of these things are identical to the UK. And then once on the day of the exam, you set your, the assessor sets the settings to view only, so the examinee can't see the assessor. And so the options and the examinee must, the assessor can see what the examinee is answering the questions by, so you can see both the paper and you can see the examinee, and you monitor both the examinee to be sure that they're not doing anything that they shouldn't be doing on the paper, and you monitor the examinees so that their eyes are on the computer and not wandering off somewhere else doing something else. And you also make sure that they cannot print or save the exam, because these exams are supposed to be secret. So then they mark it, and then at the completion they close the paper on their computer, the share link is removed, and the local and cloud copy are deleted. So once they've examined it, it's passed on to the Australian Maritime College. I can't see it. the examinee can't see it. Nobody can see it anymore. It just goes off to them. And then they process it. The practical exam here is still conducted. Well, let me reset for a second. And so it's largely pictures and a sort of practice communication system. And that's all done online with the examinee. So the examinee can identify the pictures, they'll see the pictures, and they identify what the little pictures are, and they do this little practice test, and then the examiner signs off on it. Basically, there's no evidence that they took it except for the examiner's word. So at any rate, when the exam is finally graded and the examinee gets the results, they then need to fill out a call sign request form. They get the certificate, they fill out a call sign request form, and that the call sign request form runs from about $20 to about $60, depending on what kind of call sign you're requesting. $20 if you want a lucky dip, just a random call sign, and $60 if you want a 2x2 in a popular state like New South Wales. So that's what mine would cost. Then they pay for that, and they also pay another $75 to the ACMA, and wait for the license to be issued, which can take usually takes about three to 4 days. So waiting period can be anywhere from a couple weeks to 3 to 4 to a month before they're on the air. I reset for one more second here. So I sort of abbreviated the talk because I got knocked out, and I also got Dave did a lot of what is similar. So if anybody has any questions, please feel free to ask. VK2DY.
Yeah, Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima for you, Robert.
Yes, go ahead, Dave. I think I'm outside, and my phone is starting to react to the heat.
Yeah, no problems there, Robert. Yeah, you got a lot warmer than it is here. It's only got 2 degrees C here at the moment. Yeah, it's very interesting the amount of money it actually costs to get a license. Once the exam is done, the RSGB automatically electronically forwards it to Ofcom, our regulator. And basically, you can get, log into the Ofcom website the following afternoon. Provided it's not taken on a Friday or a Saturday or a Sunday, you know, because you'll have to wait till the Monday then. And it's all there ready for you. It's very, very quick. And, say, for example, you had a 10 o'clock exam and you had some minor technical problems or whatever and you couldn't start exactly at the 10 o'clock time, you got a 30-minute flexible period. So basically you could start anywhere between the 10 a.m. and the, say, 10:30 as well. So... The invigilator, I was copying you then, the invigilator here definitely cannot see anything on the candidate's screen at all. They're totally in the dark. They're just there to, prevent anything that going amiss and to warn on the candidate's side with respect to the actual examination itself. Well, thank you very much, Robert. Very much appreciated. The costs really, really are surprising to me, as apart from the examination fee, which some rich radio clubs will waive if the person hasn't got a lot of money or is young or disabled or something like that, and then but the license is free in the UK, and basically it's just the study materials which you can actually purchase from the RSGB. And if you're a member, you'll get a 10% discount as well. Back to you, Robert, and thank you very much. This is Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima.
Yes, let me just go over the fees one last time. $90 for a regulation exam, $90 for a foundation and a practical exam together. If you take them together, if you take them separate, it's another $90 for the practical exam. So it's $180. Minimum $20 for a call sign recommend, that's $200. And then $75 for the first year of your foundation license. So if you turn $75 in just for 1 year as a foundation call, it's a pretty pricey deal. Even in U.S. dollars, that's about $200. So that's a big deal. VK2DY.
Yeah, from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. Yeah, it's that's what was surprising about your insight into the Australian licensing system. But the reason that was given, I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was costing Ofcom. Well, it was the previous organisation. Ofcom is just a new name for it. It's the same organisation. They just rebranded themselves. It was costing them too much in collecting the fees and putting the checks through and all the rest of it. And it was costing them more than they were actually getting in from the license fees themselves. So they decided that they'll just give up and make them free. So that's how it came about in the UK. Anyway, that's all for me, Robert. Thank you very much, and I'll pass it back to you. This is GWASZL.
GWASZL is VK2DY. Yeah, they got around that here. They figured it costs $4 to issue a license. So everything else is just labeled as tax. So you get an annual bill of $55 and $4 license fee and $51 tax. Yep, they got around it. Anyway, I will not go on about this. There's a whole lot I could say that would get very political very quickly. So let's just pass on to David, the next speaker, KB9EWG, VK2DY.
Well, good evening to you, Robert. Thank you, and good evening to you, Dave. Excellent to hear from both of you there, and interesting hearing some of the differences between your systems and the system here there. And I also want to give a little hand wave out to Dave out there from Varg. Good to see you out there, Dave. Anyways, good evening, everybody. This is David, K9EWG, South Garage Echo 2289. And GLARG Echo, or 2245 Echo, is my GLARG DE number. Good evening, everybody. I am very pleased to be part of this program tonight, and I have been an active examiner for amateur radio licensing for quite some time now. I am very active with the Greater Los Angeles group that I've been testing with, almost being qualified with W5YR and the AWRL. Further, I would like to say that I'm very proud of what the online testing has done, and further, what it is doing. For example, the Los Angeles group alone has administered over 3,000 tests since their inception in April of 2020. I will be spending some time with you this evening discussing the requirements needed for online testing, and I will be using information supplied by the group that I'm with, GLARG, the Greater Los Angeles Amateur Radio Group, which, by the way, is a DEC only, they're not a club. The requirements they use will be similar in most cases to other organizations, but there may be some differences. You may choose to, if you choose other clubs or groups there, there might be some minor differences. You should investigate those before starting. Let me reset here. Okay, starting with requirements. And you must meet these requirements to be able to take your examination, or you will not be administered an examination there. First of all, there is no age requirement to become an amateur radio operator. If you are under 13, you will have to have your parent or guardian fill out the COPPA, C-O-P-P-A, parental consent form, and save it as a PDF and email it as an attachment to COPPA@examtools.org before you can register for the exam. That's required, for anybody under 13 there. You will need a signed government-issued picture ID, like a driver's license, passport, school ID, or identity card. You must have a U.S. address that you can receive mail at from the FCC. Of course, that's an FCC requirement. The candidate must consent to the audio and video recording of the session. We need that in case our VEC asks for proof. We will not video your ID documents. All sessions, audio and video, and screen share content for any fully remote exam session could be recorded and retained for a year for test integrity, audits, review, and training. Let me reset here. Okay, you need a laptop or desktop computer with an up-to-date Chrome web browser. Other browsers will work, but Chrome is the recommended browser to use. And of course, a webcam. We've tried with a few other browsers that worked, but it would be a shame to cancel your test session because you have a browser that's incompatible. So make sure you have Chrome before the exam. Be sure you can share your screen with us and your camera at the same time. You can't do that on an iPad. Actually, I saw it done today, but there is a trick to it there. Number three, you will need to close all applications on your system except for Chrome and Zoom. If there are exceptions, you will have to explain to the examiners, and we might not be able to administer your exam. You should disable pop-ups and messages that are not likely to invalidate the exam, but they could be annoying and put all electronic devices in another room. The camera must be clearly show the candidate's face and or a side view that shows the entire test area. The camera must be high enough quality to be usable for reviewing identification documents. Please try your camera out here. I'll give you an address to test it out at here. That would be http://zoom.com/test. If you can't read it, we can't read it, and you'll need another government-issued signed picture ID like your passport. We need to see it around your room, and and we need to see at least your face during the exam. A side view showing you at the computer is even better. You can use one computer to take... Oh, sorry about that. I timed out there. I guess I didn't prep a crystal for that one. Okay, stand by here. I gotta get back to where I was. All right, anyways, continuing on. We need to see around your room, and that will include a full 360 view of the room. We want to see the ceiling, the floor as well, including under your desk and on your desk surface. And some people might ask, well, we look at the ceiling. Well, today it was a good example of that. We had a candidate in, and he was showing us around his room. We had to see a ceiling. We saw something suspicious. We didn't know what it was. So we asked him what it was, and we thought it might be. It turned out to be a camera on the ceiling in his house mounted as a security camera. Although this camera was looking right over his shoulder during the exam. Of course, we don't know who could be looking at that camera and could be watching his exam to give him possible answers there. So we wound up making that candidate move to the bathroom because he couldn't take the examination there with the camera pointing at him. Let me reset here and I'll continue on. Okay. Of course, if you use a cell phone there, the sound must be turned off so you hear any ringing or notifications. And log into Zoom meetings to show the side view. If you're planning on using two devices, make sure you can get the Zoom test. Please try this before the session. Of course, a lot of this has gone over with the people who set up the exam prior to them getting to the exam there, so... Only a single monitor may be used at the time you're testing there. If you use multiple monitors, they have to be turned off, unplugged. We might have to be turned around or covered up there also during the exam. We can't allow two monitors because it's possible that they can be watching something else. So anyways, Yeah, the examiners will ask you to verify that other monitors are not going to go on during the exam. If they do, and you turn around to look at them, the bees will probably terminate the exam. Almost for sure. They'll question that what's going on, because at least three bees will be viewing it at all times. Let me reset here. Oftentimes we have four or more bees, but you know, minimum is three, of course, here in the U.S. At the start of your exam, you will need a way to show your bees your screen on your computer. You get a share screen to your Zoom program there. This can be accomplished in one of the following. A laptop with a camera and microphone running the Zoom app to join the same video call. Alternatively, a webcam that will show the examinee at all times. Of course, you've got to have a stable broadband internet connection of at least 3 megabytes per second. Download and upload. We have had to postpone, reschedule sessions that did not have enough bandwidth. On the examinee side, if your audio or video is cutting out, you'll be put back in the waiting room and might lose your place in the queue there to take your test. We have terminated exam sessions due to insufficient bandwidth, unstable internet connections. Test your internet speeds before you can go to https://www.speedtest.net or https://fast.com to run a speed test on your computer connection. Let me reset here. Okay, you will need a hands-free speaker and microphone setup. Built into the computer is best. Headphones and headsets are not allowed. And lately we've been checking for earbuds and possibly even Bluetooth hearing aids. We've been doing some checks on that, as well as we've been checking to see if anybody's wearing a smartwatch. So that's a few of the things we've been adding to our checking of the area before testing. Microphones must be on, and everything going on at the examinee's location must be audible to the BE team throughout the exam session. We have successfully used a side view phone, which was out of reach of the examinee, to see the side view of the test there. Of course, a blank piece of paper and pen or pencil for doing the calculations. We prefer to use an on-screen calculator, but you can use a handheld calculator. But you must show that the calculator is free of any memories saved before you take the test there. Let me reset here. Okay. You must have a quiet space with clear desk or table, and during your look around the room, we will ask to see the surface of your desk also to make sure there's nothing on there. So a clear desk or table can be kept that way for the entire exam session. The following circumstances could invalidate your exam or require you to reschedule or at least exit the test room and possibly go to the end of the queue. Reset, and I'll read those on here. First, another person walking into your exam space during or being visible or audible during the session. That definitely will stop the examination there. Obvious candidate distractions from any source, including phones, watches, pets, standing up, leaving your chair, etc. Appearing to look at anything but the exam screen, reaching for things outside the view of the camera, eyes moving away from the exam screen, and we are watching your eyes during the examination, by the way. Any other suspicious circumstances that, as determined by the examiners, we need to maintain integrity of the exam process, please help us do that. Let me reset here. Okay. And obvious candidate distractions from any source, including phones, watches, pets, will appear to look at anything but the exam screen. Any other suspicious circumstances could, as determined by the examiners, with three or more VEs watching your eyes throughout the exam, you'll really be scrutinized even more when more than an in-person examination. Let me reset here. Okay, register for the session. With that, you just need... okay, then you have to register for the session there. With that, you just need to be presented, should have pointed your thinking in the right direction regarding online testing. At this point, allow me to pass the session back to Gordon, KY6B, to introduce our final narrator. Hopefully the final narrator is available. And then we'll move towards the closing of this evening. Back to you there, Captain, KY6B from KB9EWG.
Well, thank you, David. KY6B here. Very informative, guys. I'm still really amazed at some of the prices that some of these countries are charging for what they're doing in the ham radio area. And, you know, we here in the United States are going through a battle right now. The FCC wants to raise and charge more for the licensing procedure, and everybody's up in arms, and we don't know how the devil this is going to turn out. It's always been our feeling that it's should be free or cheaper, you know, ham radio all inclusive. Okay, we're going to be moving up to Charlie. His time restraints are very tight on him. He's about ready to take a hour and a half or 2 hour exam for some of the studies that he's going through. So I see that he's still connected. So let me turn it over to Charlie, and to introduce him, his call is K3CL, who was very involved with the starting software programming aspect of what we're discussing tonight. It should be interesting to see some of the trials and tribulations that these programmers had to go through if we have time to cover some of that. So, Charlie, are you available at this point? K3, Charlie Lima from KY6V.
Yep, I'm here, and not a moment too soon. If it would have been, you know, for another... 10 or 15 minutes or so, I probably would have to disconnect. But I am here, and I am available if you want me to go ahead.
Please proceed, sir. I've got your recordings here. I'm going to have to get them into the system so that we can include that on the recording. But if you're going to speak from the information that you had gathered, I'd prefer that, however you want to handle it. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, I guess we'll go ahead and do it live. Thank you, Gordon, and thank you, David, for the previous segments here. Like everyone said, I'm Charlie, K3CL, and in this section of the TIN, we'll be covering some of the approaches in the software, mostly with the caveat being this is still mostly U.S.-centered. You know, it's just some of the approaches in the software used in remote ham radio exams, which also includes some history of remote exams in general. I know when we put this together, it was originally intended to just discuss, you know, the software approach and all that stuff, but upon some further research and kind of digging back into what we did before, it would be disingenuous to not include the history behind it because they are very much intertwined here. So we kind of have to do it in both parts, and then we'll put them together so it makes some more sense here. So the current iteration of remote testing, the current iteration that most of us know and are familiar with and what's happening right now, and I do have to emphasize the term remote testing, because online testing, that other term that kind of gets thrown around, that other term has a not so great connotation in certain contexts. You know, sometimes some people might misconstrue it as you're not being watched. You're not, you know, like you're not being, you know, watched while you're taking it, which is completely untrue. You are, in fact, you do have at least three examiners, you know, watching you take the exam. So that's why we emphasize the term remote testing. But it began, you know, this iteration began in March of this year. But the seeds for all this, you know, actually started much earlier, both in the rules and the software side of things. So first we're going to cover the rules. In particular, the FCC in 2014 released the report and order 14-74, which among other things explicitly authorized remote exams. And most importantly, though, when they authorized this, they did not specify, or they did not prescribe, rather, exactly how they were supposed to happen. And this was all mostly in response to the Anchorage Amateur Radio Club Volunteer Examiner Coordinator, Anchorage VEC, which we're going to refer to later. They wanted to cater to their Alaskan population a little bit better. So the special thing about Alaska is that it's the largest U.S. state by area, but it's also one of the most sparsely populated states in the Union, and I think there's only like one undersea telecommunications cable serving the entire state, and there's very limited roads. A lot of places, you know, like in order to really get anywhere within Alaska or even out of Alaska, you would have to either take a train, or of the few roads, you'd probably have to drive like 500 miles or so, or worse yet, you know, take a bush plane or something like that, or even take a boat, drive yourself onto a boat and head to the Neck Island or whatever. Essentially, you know, transport and infrastructure in Alaska is still to this day very lacking compared to the rest of the continental U.S. So they needed, you know, better ways to, you know, offer these exams compared to, let's say, you know, having people, you know, take a plane to Anchorage, take the exam, and then fly back, very expensive. So they took advantage of this new rule to offer what's called proctored remote exams. So how proctored remote exams work is that you still have your at least three volunteer examiners situated somewhere else. They're going to be linked in both via a video link and telephone link. And where the candidate is, they're going to have an on-site proctor. I mean, it doesn't have to be another amateur radio operator. In fact, Anchorage VEC actually specify which occupations can serve as the on-site proctor. And so they've been running, you know, exams like that, you know, ever since the new rule came into effect. And with great success. You know, it's pretty much only offered by appointment, because they have to get everyone together, of course, and make sure the on-site proctor is actually qualified to do so. But they've been doing it for quite a bit. You know, the exams themselves are entirely computer based, so the candidate actually, you know, uses their laptop or some computing device, and just, you know, answers all the questions and all that good stuff on their device while they're being watched, and everything's graded instantaneously, and they get their license soon if they pass or their upgrade. So, side note, the ARRL, they've also taken advantage of this rule in a couple of cases. They did it in Antarctica, and I think they did a couple Hawaii sessions. But they were special sessions. They were kind of one-offs. So there has been some remote testing activity prior to this current iteration, but very limited scope. So now that we know that at least in the U.S. remote exams had been authorized, you know, since 2014. Now let's kind of take a look at a little bit of the history of the software, some of the motivations, some of the design decisions that have been made there. So with regards to software in general, computer-based testing it's nothing new. You know, many other fields, many professional licensing exams or, you know, even academic exams use computer-based testing, either multiple choice or fill in the blank or whatever, you know, just, you know, to cut down on paperwork, cut down on the manual grading and all that good stuff. So, but for various reasons, in the ham radio world, we've kind of been slow to adopt that, to adopt, you know, computer-based testing in sort of a wider scale. So one major example, which is what most are using, Anchorage to this day actually don't use this for their remote testing in any form except for registration and paperwork processing. But let's enter in Richard, KD7BBC. He is the one who started the Ham Study platform. He's of Ham Study, exam tools, and signal stuff, which makes some antennas there. He made Ham Study as a platform to help people study for their ham radio exams, with a web-based interface and an app, mostly so that you can keep track of all the questions you've been shown, which ones you've answered correctly, which ones you keep missing, and tries to drill you so that you end up every time you take a practice test, you can get over 80-85% so that you're ready for the real one. So along with Ham Study, he created exam tools, you know, just kind of as a companion platform. Very similar interface even. You could all, like, those who have been familiar with studying on Ham Study, when they actually take an exam using exam tools, the interfaces look almost identical because, well, they're kind of the same platform in a way. But Richard originally created exam tools as a tool to help him run exams in the Salt Lake City area. He's found that, especially with the larger sessions, the VEs tend to get preoccupied not with properly monitoring the candidates taking their exams, but they get preoccupied with all the registration, all the paperwork processing, and handing all the paper out. I dropped it for a second. But yeah, Richard created exam tools to, you know, especially with the Salt Lake City area sessions, to, you know, cut down on a lot of the tedious work. So instead of, like, the VEs having to, you know, watch everyone, but also, like, do all the registration and the paperwork and signing stuff and all the other tedious work, he created exam tools to expedite a lot of it so that the VEs can actually spend more time, spend more effort watching all the candidates take their exams. So exam tools in this sense is pretty much the ham radio version of computer-based testing. And because Richard also, as a bonus, he works at GradeCam, so company, it's kind of like a Scantron competitor, although they use like a camera or a phone or whatever, anything with a camera on it to scan answer sheets, you know, bubbled in answer sheets and come up with a grade. So he's integrated some of GradeCam technology into exam tools for some in-person sessions that don't want to use a lot of the computer-based stuff. They still want to have like a paper answer sheet and all that stuff. So you can use GradeCam as part of exam tools to, you know, grade answer sheets without having to resort to templates. And so especially with the larger sessions, it's very much proven exceptionally useful. Really cutting down a lot of human effort in, you know, all the registration, you know, all the processing, all the handing out, collecting, grading, and everyone immediately knows how everyone did. You know, it's been battle tested in multiple different, even in like academic settings. I know Cal Poly, they do a ham cram, I think, every year. We actually did it this year remotely, but when they would do it in person, you essentially have a whole bunch of college students crammed into an auditorium, and they gave out the exam in the auditorium. And if I know in the past when they did it all on paper, it was just an hours-long ordeal that probably no one would ever get back. And with exam tools, you could get some of that time back. But that's the software. So now let's put these two components together. So remote exams have been authorized by the FCC since 2014, and now we have a ham radio specific computer-based testing platform. So now we enter into COVID-19 pandemic. So back in March, when much of the U.S. started to come into lockdown, there were still a lot of prospective hams who wanted to get licensed, and they were probably signed up for some in-person sessions down the road, and of course, you know, they were going to get canceled because they're hosted in places where there are vulnerable populations and other policies. So, you know, you've got some disappointed prospective hams there. And amongst them, there was a man like Sam Hulick, who has since been licensed as W9DEV. We administered a remote session for him eventually. But back in March, he tweeted at AjitPi, yes, that AjitPi, to inquire about remote ham exams. So Sam has one of those fabled blue check marks next to his Twitter handle, next to his Twitter account. And so I guess AJIT had some motivation to respond to him. And so he replied, well, I'll take a look at it. But it was, even without AJIT responding to that, a whole bunch of us hams who are on Twitter, we noticed the high profile post, and a few of us started to get together on Twitter and started to figure stuff out how to organize things. So eventually the amount of hams who wanted to help out, especially the VEs who wanted to help out and noticed the Twitter thread, it got to a point where, you know, doing it all on Twitter, doing it via Twitter direct messages or group chats or whatever on there, got to be a bit much. We kind of outgrew Twitter, so Sam suggested, and he actually did so, he started a Basecamp instance. And Basecamp is a little platform. It's a commercial platform, but we were able to use it for free because it was a, you know, community project. But Sam set up a Basecamp instance to really get all of us together, get everything a bit more organized than it was on Twitter. Set up a few workspaces, set up threads about, okay, what's the process going to be like, how are we going to document it, you know, how's the software looking, what do we need to do to the software. And through all of this stuff, we determined that, you know, since Richard already had exam tools, albeit for in-person sessions, it wouldn't be too hard to, you know, add stuff to it to actually make it work for remote sessions as well. So that's what we ended up, started off with. A few of us started documenting stuff. A few of us, you know, figured out some of the vulnerabilities and how do we mitigate those. And so it really started taking off on Basecamp. So eventually we got to a point on Basecamp where things were almost ready to, you know, start demoing. And once we got there, you know, we had already started contacting quite a few of the VECs who had, you know, of course, probably suspended most, if not all, their in-person sessions by that point. And the first one to, you know, want to see a demo of something like this happening, you know, both as just a dry demo and even one with one candidate, was W5YI VEC. So we showed Larry of W5YI VEC, you know, our work, and then he later on authorized an actual, you know, demo with a real candidate. That candidate, I don't remember who it was, but he got relicensed. He used to be licensed before. He got relicensed through the first ever fully remote exam session, even though it was a demo. So that was a great milestone for us there. But we still have a long ways to go with actually, you know, making the whole thing, you know, actually presentable to a wider audience here. So with this demo iteration, which we called it, in fact, Tier 1, it was still very much that in-person, designed for an in-person session. The digital signatures, because, of course, you're not going to be handing out paper over some remote link unless you have smell-o-vision, for lack of a better technology there, imaginary technology. You're not going to be handing out paper for people to sign and all that stuff, so we had to figure out how to do digital signatures. So in that iteration, we had to use Adobe Sign of all things. That was an adventure in and of itself. And we also had to remotely take control of the candidate's desktop on Zoom a few times, just because it just wasn't at a point where we didn't need to do so. We don't do that now, but back then we did. So that was an adventure, but you know, we kept working at this. We kept working on the software. We kept working on refining the process, figuring out, you know, different Zoom features and how we're going to collect all the money and all that good stuff. And then, lo and behold, Norm and Naomi from Greater LA, Greater LA Radio Group, or GLARG, they took notice of our work, and they were kind of the first ones to really believe in us and see all this happening at a greater scale. So once that happened, you know, like we were already kind of deep diving into, you know, doing stuff with Tier 2, making Tier 2 a reality. And then, of course, you know, ARL started noticing, and a couple other VECs started taking notice. But really, once we had Greater LA Radio Group, or GLARG, you know, really invested in us, that's when we started really getting that momentum with the VEs and people really liking our process. So we really got Tier 2. It probably wouldn't have happened that quickly without them, but when Tier 2 happened, we made sure to significantly overhaul the exam tools to actually cater better for the remote environment. So we got the digital signatures integrated into the platform, so no more Adobe Sign. We don't have to take control of the desktop anymore. And also, with even greater numbers of VEs and the process maturing, we moved to Discord to continue kind of this momentum, and the server's still active today. We got even more Discord servers for the different VE teams out there. So that's pretty much how you have it for a primer on history and approaches of remote ham radio exams, at least how they work in the U.S. So at least from the exam tools-based sessions, which is pretty much most remote sessions that are happening in the U.S., with Anchorage being the major exception. Anchorage still have their own computer-based platform for the exam themselves, but ever since the FCC, which is technical detail here, ever since the FCC kind of changed a little bit of how they collect their information for their purposes, Anchorage have started using exam tools, but only for the registration and the paperwork processing, which we've made paperless, by the way, all the way down to the certificate of success completion there. But eventually we're gonna make things a lot smoother. I mean, of course, you know, glitches are gonna happen, some data loss, connection loss, hair loss sometimes. It might still happen, but we're continuously working on, you know, improving the reliability much more than it is now. You know, we're gonna put some more features in. We're gonna integrate some more features. Among other things, we're going to eventually get the payment stuff figured out in exam tools proper. A lot of teams are just using PayPal or some other external payment processor, depending on VEC policy. But you know, we've come a long way, and we still got a ways to go to make it, you know, as best as we can. And again, special thanks to W5YI VEC and GLARG for believing in us early on. Made a lot of people happy, made a lot of VEs happy, made a lot of prospective and current hams happy. So with that, I'm K3CL. Thanks, everyone.
Well, thank you, Charlie. Boy, that was very, very informative. Let's see if we've got any questions for you from the audience. Anybody would like to talk with Charlie? KY6V, over.
Kilo Golf 5, Zulu, India.
Go right ahead, Professor Dayton.
Well, Charlie, I want to second that emotion. That was very, very informative and very interesting. And all I can say is that I am totally impressed. That is fantastic. Your timing was perfect. You got a good group together. You saw the need, and you guys persevered and made it happen. Congratulations. That's about all I can say. Good job, man. Obviously, it was an integral part of the success of our remote testing. Over.
Yeah, did you want to respond to that, Charlie?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what I can say to that. Well, I personally cannot really take too much credit. That really belongs to Richard and Marcel and Lucky 225. Yes, that is his real legal name, and many others that I really cannot, you know, and Grant, who's from Florida, actually got me in, and many, many, many others who have been there since the beginning. And, you know, I was mostly there for the ride, make sure that, really just make sure that people were actually doing the right stuff, you know, providing some feedback, but really, like, the bulk of the work really has to go to all, bulk of the work and bulk of the credit should be going to everyone else in the group since the beginning. So I'm mostly the messenger, but, you know, whatever floats the boat.
Whatever floats the boat. Well, it's floating very well, sir. KY6V here. Well, I know you're probably getting very close to test time, so we're not going to hold you, Charlie. Just a couple of real quick questions for me. At this juncture, what's overall size is the software to perform the remote testing in megabytes or certainly in gigabytes, I would assume? That would be question number one. Question number two, I was very interested to find out that, you know, some of the interplay started back in 2014. But it seems to me that there was a gigantic endeavor produced in March of this year that really started to turn into fusion and finality, where it was usable in early April. So am I reading that right? It was about 30 days of you guys pulling your hair out or what?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Probably not to the scale of pulling our hair out, but you know, we had a lot of all of us who were there in the early days. We were very much dedicated to wanting to see this, you know, happen, and you know, make sure that not only that we had a solid process, we had solid software and all that good stuff, but really be able to defend ourselves from a lot of the naysayers, because we have a lot of naysayers in ham radio with regards to new stuff. So there was a lot of different factors at play that we needed to take you know, good looks at and really be prepared there. So I mean what most people might see as just the software or the process or the documentation, that there was a lot of you know, preparations in defending ourselves from various politics happening as well. So you know, I wouldn't say pulling our hair out, but there was just a lot of, you know, dedication, you know, and just, you know, as volunteers to really make it happen. With regards to software size, it's all web-based. I don't have access to the source code, although I probably should ask Richard for it eventually if I want to start hacking on it. But you know, it's all web based. A lot of the, you know, it's Java, a lot of JavaScript. So when you actually go on the platforms at all, it's extremely interactive, all the way to the point where, like, even while you're taking an exam and the page glitches or something like that, you can refresh the page. And your progress is still saved right there. You don't have to go back and, you know, check for anything gone wrong. It's all there, and we're just going to keep making it better. So I can't really speak for size, but I can speak for some of the resiliency. K3CL.
Well, that's a great answer. Thank you, Charlie. KY6V here. On the naysayer department, I'll tell you what, I've got my bruises, I've worn my moccasins, I know exactly what you're talking about. When we opened up South Cars back in 2007, I'll tell you, I had a political nightmare on my hands because of the naysayers out saying, this is not going to work. This is not amateur radio, blah, 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 and we won. But it was brutal at times. All right, any more questions for Charlie before he disappears and takes an exam? Over. Okay, Charlie. Hey, thank you. Great job. Good luck on the test, and come back and see us, okay?
All right, Gordon. Thank you for allowing me to be part of this program, and yeah, Should probably get my mind reset so I can, you know, take this exam. In fact, it was only supposed to be for 75 minutes, but you know, we timed it perfectly. So great job, K3CL.
All right, good luck in that department. Thanks, Charlie. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, all those ships out at sea, thank you very much for coming by this evening. And for those that missed the program, the audio recording of the program should be posted on our website tomorrow. I try to normally do that on a Friday morning, so we'll see how that works out. And with that, I'm going to say this has been SCARS, VOIP, Net Schedules and General Information. May be found on the SCARS VOIP.com website. Good night to all. 73s. We are now closing the session. Thank you for your participation, and the net is now closed. Diddly-daddy-da.